right. Welcome to episode 28 of the Rated NA podcast for nerdappropriate.com. We are here in HD.
We're back.
HD.
We're all on. We have mics now.
That means we can just pan the audio to different sides.
Yeah.
Audio pan.
What's awesome is Ash sits about 3 inches away from the mic and then leans into it right when he's going to say something.
Yeah. I'm excited.
I am too.
I feel like I've leveled up.
Yeah.
This is definitely, I feel like I'm a level two podcaster.
It was like Final Fantasy, though, where we had to play for 27 episodes before we could level up.
We were grinding mobs.
We're going to feel much closer to the 35 people that listen to this podcast.
Hey.
Hey.
We're growing every year.
All the 1 year.
Every year we're growing.
We are growing.
So, it's been a couple weeks. We took last week off. I was headed to vacation, and you were sick with the plague, and I had just come off being sick, and it was just not a good time to podcast.
Yeah, we almost did it a week ago.
A week ago,
and,
yeah.
And I literally had the fever.
Yeah.
It's funny how I got it. I was feeling fine, and then I started, like, sneezing one night, and then my wife was like, hey, let's go to IKEA and shop for some furniture. And I'm like, oh, all right. Literally in IKEA, I break out in the sweats and I get goosebumps all over me and I'm drenched with sweat. And like, I was literally shaking all over. And I'm like, I have something really fucking awful. And I was stuck in IKEA and it was like being stuck in the seventh level of hell. I was just wandering in circles. I couldn't find my way out. There's furniture everywhere and screaming children.
IKEA is only one of two places that I've ever had a panic attack.
Did you get that claustrophobic kind of cold sweat?
Yeah. And the worst was I got relatively weak because I had a fever in IKEA. And I had to load all this furniture into my car.
Oh, you bought stuff.
Yeah, we bought
stuff. You had to take it home.
We were there for, you know, and it was raining that day. It was probably one of the worst situations ever. And then everything didn't fit into my car. So we had to open the boxes of furniture and take them all apart and then put them in piece by piece.
Oh, man.
It was a nightmare.
That's no good.
I made it. I lived.
Good. How about you, buddy?
I think in the last week or two, I was still having trouble with my arm or neck or something like that. And
so you've gone fully bionic.
Yeah, I wish. I mean, like, I think you
would at this point.
I think I made the joke at one point that I like to think that I'm Will Smith from iRobot in the morning. You know, like trying to make my arm feel better because it's not, you know, it's like a robotic arm,
right?
Like a tough one, but it's nothing like that. I'm a wuss. But yeah, I feel better.
Good.
So good. I'm good to go.
We're falling apart.
I went to Savannah for 3 days.
Awesome.
That is something fun.
That was fun.
Well, I was sick the entire time.
Oh, well, okay. Everybody's
sick. It was a stomach flu, which is the best thing to have in a place full of really good restaurants.
That sucks.
But I did it anyways. I didn't really care. I ate food and then just crapped my brain out every day.
Did you get it on the way there or did you have it?
So I had a cold, like a week ago, I had like a weird cold thingy where like I was achy and just felt like crap. And then that was gone by Saturday, or mostly gone by Saturday. And then Sunday, I had this weird, I had a fever all of a sudden, and I was achy again. I didn't know what was going on. My body just, it was like it was relapsing. And I was like, oh, shit, I hope I don't get sick again. And then I woke up Monday and felt totally fine, except every meal I ate was gone like 10 minutes later.
Ooh,
so,
ouch.
Yeah.
I blame the weather here.
I don't know what it is, man.
Because we had, you know, the 90 to 100 degree days, and then with no rain, and now it rains every afternoon, so the temperature is constantly changing with the pressure and everything.
I mean, we do essentially live in a bog.
Yeah.
I mean, we weren't technically supposed to live here.
You've seen my front yard, right? It's very much so.
It's like, you know, we
it's
live
my backyard.
We could quest there.
Yeah.
We could. Low-level questing.
Yeah.
Has anybody been playing anything?
Oh, boy.
Well, the game we've... A couple of them we're talking about today, but anything that we're playing about that we're not talking about?
From you, I borrowed Enslaved, and I think that's going to be my underdog pick of 2010.
Really?
Yeah, because that's when that game came out, right?
It is, yeah, last year.
Yeah, it's a shame that went to budget so quickly because it's actually really good.
That's cool.
I played through an underdog title, too. I played Dark Void all the way through.
Also sitting in my game pile.
Yeah. I heard things.
It's not a good game, that's for sure. It's a strange game. its narrative is actually what kept me in for the whole the whole run, and it was actually kind of fun.
That's cool.
Frustrating as all hell, but
you just kind of suffered through it.
Yeah, really well voice acted, well done.
How long was it?
Probably an 8-hour campaign, maybe a little bit less.
Yeah,
that's cool.
But it's cool. The flight mechanics are cool once you get the hang of them. So it's a fun game.
Cool.
If you're into those budgetary games.
I just realized the low was down on your voice the entire time. So that's why you sounded like you were paper thin, and the rest of us had some boom.
Yeah.
Some boom to our voice.
Hey. Okay, cool.
We can all do this now, too. You can talk really quiet.
Sexy time. Other than that, yeah.
Trench
is the game that we've all
been
playing.
So we're going to be talking about that, but that's pretty much all I have played.
I can also testify to the fact that I got my wife to watch all of Firefly.
You know, for those that are listening that doesn't know this, Scott's wife is an excellent hairstylist, and she cuts all of our hair.
Yep.
And she was talking to me when she cut my hair, saying that she was only on episode 2, but she was really enjoying it. And I actually had like a nerd spasm, and she almost cut my ear off.
Wow.
Cause like, what? Yeah, no, because Scott's wife is notorious for not being like anti-nerd, but it's taking her longer to kind of ease into our
she's
culture.
She's not nerdy.
Yeah, she's not nerdy.
She really isn't.
She's like, I'm really loving Firefly. And I was like, really? And like, there goes my ear.
We told her that she was only, what, 3 steps from playing D&D with us?
And she was like, no.
She's like, no, not happening. And we're like, no, you're almost there. You're almost there.
Even when we finished it, she was like, you know, this isn't really like sci-fi as much as it is just like a drama about characters. And I was like, I'll take it.
Well, you just have to trick her into realizing that's all sci-fi is. Like, all science fiction is really just about the characters.
Right. Yeah. And I even got her to watch like the first 5 episodes of Battlestar. But like when there's, you know, 8 seasons or 4 seasons to watch, it just I ended up doing it on my own. But
yeah,
I did start Speaker for the Dead.
Oh, awesome.
I'm about 100 pages in. He has a way of getting really annoying and then getting out of being annoying.
Yeah, you just got to get there with him.
Because he's like, you're reading it and you're like, like the beginning of Speaker for the Dead is awesome. Like the first 50 pages is just a really awesome story. And then something happens, which is really the crux of the beginning of the novel. Like the first 50 pages just teaching you what is going on, like what world you're in. And something happens, and then after that something happens, it's like 30 pages of him talking philosophy, and it just makes me want to punch him in the face. It's like the most half of it's in Portuguese for no reason, and he speak and like there's no subtitling, you know, quote unquote, in the book, so there'll just be like a sentence in Portuguese and you're like,
cool,
well, there's a thing I didn't understand at all, like
good for him.
It's really weird, but the book is fucking really
I'm
good.
Sure he's, I think I'm anybody, sure he's well read.
Anybody who is a Mass Effect fan, I think Ender's Game, definitely, and then Speaker for the Dead are must reads.
Yeah,
it's such a
I would recommend them.
Such a good sci-fi epic.
Sweet.
All right, we're actually going to take a break real quick before we get into the news, and then we're going to jump in the news and get going.
Hooray.
Sweet. News.
This is Dr. Ariel Hansen from StarCraft II. You're listening to the Rated NA podcast at nerdappropriate.com.
And we're back.
Cool. What are we doing?
We're doing some news.
All right.
Ash, you've got the first story.
Yeah. Well, this came about for an interesting reason. Last year at Comic-Con, I was walking the floor and my jaw literally just dropped open, and I scampered across the floor, and I like looked at some of the most amazing cosplay I'd ever seen. Now, I'm not a cosplayer. I've never cosplayed myself. I don't know how to make costumes. It's not like my thing, but I saw this group cosplaying Mass Effect 2, and it was literally some of the best costumes I had ever seen in a convention, and I'm a sort of a convention nerd. So that's, you know, that kind of goes a long way. That was my 8th Comic-Con, so it's not like I was, you know, a newbie at seeing costumes at that place or anything like that. But they were incredibly well done, and it was Grunt and Tally and Commander Shepard, and there was an Elusive Man, and they were, like, literally cinema quality. And everywhere that these folks went in the costumes, a massive crowd gathered around them, and just flashbulbs were going off everywhere, and they were just swarmed with people. Turns out I didn't really, you know, I took some pictures and freaked out and totally just had a nerd moment. And then I went home and found out who actually, I should face the microphone. Turns out that the person that actually made these costumes is a girl by the name of Holly Conrad. And she is just a huge, huge Mass Effect fan. And the cool part of the story is she did it totally on her own with her friends. And she has this just group of cosplayers, and they made these amazing costumes. They came in second place at the San Diego Comic-Con.
Second place to what?
I know, right? They should have totally.
The costumes look ridiculous.
They were great. They were phenomenal. So they came in second place last year, and she's like, well, this year I'm going to go all out, and I'm going to make the next round of costumes even better. BioWare loved her costumes so much that they kind of are endorsing her in a sense. And this year they're actually sponsoring her to be there, and she's going to be part of the BioWare costume contest that they're actually having at San Diego Comic-Con. And they actually, if you looked at the trailer called The Invasion, the live-action trailer they put out for Mass Effect 3, one of her costumes for the Husks is actually in the trailer. So they're actually kind of commissioning a fan to do stuff for them. And so I just thought it was a good story. Excuse me. A good story to see BioWare really supporting their community and helping out people that are, you know, also big, big fans. So pretty cool. So she's going back this year with all new costumes. And they look phenomenal for what we've seen.
That's awesome. Yeah, really, I mean, the ones from last time look, I mean, just insane.
Yeah,
I don't remember seeing them. Was it the year I was there or the year before?
I think it was the year you were there. It was the last day is the day that I saw it. So I saw it on Sunday.
You weren't there on Sunday.
Okay, yeah. I saw it on Sunday on the floor, and I literally just, like, stalked them and took a bunch of pictures. But if you guys listening want to check out some of their work, the website's called crabcatindustries.com, and you can see a bunch of YouTube videos and stuff if you YouTube Holly Conrad, BioWare, or Holly Conrad, Mass Effect.
The pictures on the website look really good. It's just crabcat.com.
Yeah. Pretty awesome stuff. And it's, like I said, it's just great to see BioWare really, really supporting fans and trying to help them, you know. The fact that she got to work on a commercial is pretty sick.
Yeah. That's cool, man. BioWare's a good company. They seem to really support their fans a lot of times. All right. Next up, you would think would be news dear to my heart. I just don't know if I give a shit after the first one. G.I. Joe 2 has some casting notes finally, I guess, finally, quote unquote.
Yeah, G.I. Joe 2. Well, I put this in there for you because you are our G.I. Joe guy. And
I just wish they didn't shit on everything that I loved about G.I. Joe.
Well, I mean, I feel the same way about Transformers, but
But like, at least you got Michael Bay, you know?
Yeah, okay.
you actually got what is proven to be a talented director who can put together a visually stunning movie,
at least. But I mean, like,
yeah,
the content is just a vehicle for his style, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway,
his style is shit blowing up the style.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah.
So Adrienne Palicki, the girl from the not lived at all Wonder Woman series,
yes, the Wonder Woman that we'll never see,
is in. She's going to be Lady Jane.
Sienna Miller has actually bowed out.
Shock.
Yeah, she's bowed out.
The one actress who has, like, an actual career.
Yeah. Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who was Cobra Commander, he bowed out too,
because
he's, like, hot shit right now. Yeah, he doesn't need G.I. Joe. But the rest of the cast looks like they're pretty much coming back.
And then they just announced Dwayne The Rock Johnson for Roadblock.
Okay.
Yes. Dwayne The Rock Johnson for Roadblock.
Close, but not
quite a black guy, but it's all right.
Yeah.
He's kind of a black guy. Right.
He was really good in Fast Five, guys. Let me tell you, he was great in Fast Five.
I mean, why not just go all the way and make him Sergeant Slaughter?
I just don't know why. Well, because Sergeant Slaughter's already in the movie.
Oh, right.
Was it Brendan Fraser? No, he wasn't Sergeant. Yeah, no, he was.
He was Sergeant Slaughter, which is the worst.
Yeah,
worst Sergeant Slaughter.
I guess that's what, like, you know, I don't expect the G.I. Joe movies to be like, you know, I don't expect, like, Social Network style, like, writing and, like, amazing Because it's G.I. Joe. It's hokey. It's an 80, if you go watch the 80s cartoon, it's hokey. Like, I'm aware of that. I'm not an idiot. But they just didn't do... They didn't even follow the ridiculously basic story that the cartoon had. Like, they were like, oh, fuck it, Baroness is in love with this guy. And then she turns into Baroness weirdly halfway through the movie for no reason whatsoever. And then... yeah, I don't know. We'll just make Brendan Fraser Sergeant Slaughter. They'll buy tickets, right? Who gives a shit? Just throw G.I. Joe on there.
And that was supposed to be like the big cameo that we were all going to like shit our pants. Oh, it's Brendan Fraser. We all love him.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah, so why didn't they just have Sergeant Slaughter as Sergeant Slaughter?
Or like Stone Cold Steve Austin.
No, yeah.
You know, if it's like we're talking about wrestling personalities. You
it
know?
Just seems like they went the other way 100%, and that was just retarded. I don't know. I mean, yeah, yay, whatever. I'll see the movie probably stupidly.
I feel this, yeah.
I'll go see it. I saw the other one.
I know. I mean, that's the thing. It's like I saw the other one.
How about that game, huh? That came out with it?
Oh, God. Scott and I played. How many hours of that thing did we play?
I don't know, like three
four
or four.
Or five,
it was
yeah.
It was essentially like Smash TV with no fun. Minus
no,
the fun.
No fun. Minus all the fun.
Wow. I'm sorry you guys played that.
I think, you know, the way the game
well,
was.
Are you shocked that?
Yeah.
You were mining achievements for
he was. It's
right. I think I got it for doing some work, but the way the game was structured, I think if you played it on easy mode, as long as you or your partner didn't die like simultaneously within the span of 2 seconds, like everyone just kept reviving. Like easy wow. mode was just like, hey, I hope you can make it through the game because this is all we got. I'm sorry.
This is all we got. We got nothing else, man. Yeah. Sorry.
So oh, anyways. Man. kind of sorry I didn't play that.
It was pretty bad. It was like not even a savable moment. I think it just was just bad.
You would think like most games are better when two people are, you know, like when you play cooperatively, like, you know, you can suffer through a lot of stuff like with a friend, and that we were just like, we can't do this anymore.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
Good stuff.
I'm going to skip one, Ash, and let's do the last one because the one that I'm skipping is kind of huge.
Okay. Sounds good.
Something that I read about earlier this week is that apparently, the new 3DS title, Resident Evil Mercenaries, is built such that there's only one save file on the cartridge, and it can never be deleted. And everyone speculates that the reason this is so is because they don't want you selling it to GameStop and them selling it used.
So,
what's your opinion on that? Do you think that's actually the case? Do you think?
Well, they obviously claim that it's not the case. But
so, wait, can you override it?
No. No, pretty much. I think the way Mercenaries works is it's more like a sort of like a score attack kind of game, and then you build your character up, and the more you play, you unlock more stuff.
Hmm.
So they make the claim that like, well, why would you ever want to delete your save file? Because right. you're just going to continue to level up your character through the game, and you know all the like. For instance, GameStop won't take this game back. Like you can't bring it in. They won't.
So once you buy it, you own it. But can you play through it twice? I mean, is it like can you start over your game?
It's more
no?
like it's more like levels you score attack through, right?
Yeah,
isn't that
you unlock more levels so you can go back to any of the old levels and replay them?
But you can never start out again as
a
level
newbie.
One guy.
No.
Or in like people, the other the other argument has been made, and I feel like this is fairly common with handheld systems: is what if it's a household system with like two kids that share the 3DS?
Yeah.
You know. So only one save game, like they both have to play together.
Man, CAC, they better come out with some reasoning here because this seems a little shady. To
well,
not...
I know Gamefly is also not renting the game at all. They're not carrying it. So you
well,
can...
I mean, it seems like it would eliminate it from them.
Yeah,
being able
I mean,
to.
They
the
can.
Point.
They're like, well, what do we do with this? Like, you know, you would rent a game that's essentially beaten already and have nothing to do. So,
yeah,
I kind of feel like Mercenaries as a you know, I don't know if it's a full price title, but it's probably at least a $40 title.
Well, you're like our resident, resident evil guy.
You're our resident
Mercenaries
resident
was always
evil
something
guy.
That you unlocked after you beat the game, and it was an extra little fun add-on thing that you could do, mm-hmm. you know, and actually add some longevity to a Resident Evil title. And it was really fun for back in the day. I don't know that it should have ever been a standalone title. I kind of feel like it was used as a vehicle to sell the demo for Resident Evil Revelations.
Right, that was the other
that's
thing.
That's what came out with it, mm-hmm. was the Resident Evil Revelations demo, which is a full-fledged Resident Evil title for 3DS.
Huh.
So it was kind of like what they did with the old Halo demo back in the day. I think they released it with Crackdown.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, oh, you know.
Crackdown. Oh, yeah.
We're just going to get Crackdown because it comes with a Halo demo.
So. Yeah.
Well, I think if the market has its way, I could see this going the way of, like, people don't buy it, and then it goes down to, like, you know, $20 or, like, half the price of what it is now. And then people just buy it, and they're like, okay, well, I'm going to keep it now because it was a $20 game.
Right, right. I just don't know why you would shit on your own product before you even put it out. I mean, there's no benefit to this, obviously. There's literally no benefit.
The benefit is that they're trying to prevent used game sales.
That's not a benefit.
Taking a cut. Well, they don't want to lose the money to use game sales.
I don't care.
I know. I mean, like, I agree.
I think what happened is they tested it, and they're like, all right, this game is hell of a lot of fun for about a week, and then after you play all the levels and level your dude up, there's nothing to do.
Right.
So people are going to trade it in mass.
But here's
make it so it can't be traded.
Here's what my argument would be. We were in a band. We put a CD out. Within 3 days, it was on eBay for $1.
Yeah.
Like, so what am I going to make it self-destruct after you listen to it the first time because somebody's going to sell it really cheap on their own used? Like,
that would be brilliant. Can you do that?
But it's pointless. You don't fucking hamper a product just because you're afraid of something that's going to happen to it once it's out. Like, I'm sorry that the used game market is chipping into your thing. Make better titles that people want to buy right away.
It's a pretty bold statement to do that. And
it's the same to me as when Apple was releasing MP3s that you couldn't move or do any. Like, once you bought them, it was still Apple's. And it was like, well, that's fucking shitty. Like, why would you do that to something? And people revolted to it.
Well, it's like Ash said, if the game is relatively short on depth, and you sell it at a full price of $40 for a 3DS game, and now you have one save game that can never be deleted. That's kind of like a triple slap.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. Like, if the game's short, don't make it a $50 game. Make it as a downloadable $15 title.
Or if it came out and they're like, hey, it's $20. There's a demo for this other game. You own it for life. Like,
well, but I mean, like, they're putting it out on a system that is introducing a downloadable market, right?
Yeah.
Why not just put it? Okay. Oh, we realize this is only a week's worth of gameplay.
And there is very...
Let's put it in that market. And they would probably be a fucking AAA stellar title in that market.
There are no 3D titles in the market right now other than Excitebike.
And that's like, that's what I'm saying. Like,
is a remake. You know?
They could move into that market and be like, oh, hey, we're the fucking big dog here. Instead, they're shitting on their... It's just, I don't know, I hate when companies do this.
No, it's weird. And, like, you know, we can speculate all we want that it is... You know, we don't know that it's a short title. I haven't played through it. I'm just assuming if it's anything like the old Mercenary games, it is short.
But even if it's 2 weeks a game or three or a month, you know, like, it's not, I don't know.
This, just to pull up some statistics, on Amazon, this game has 142 customer reviews with an average of 2 stars.
Right.
But 107 of those reviews are 1-star reviews of the 142 that are there.
Wow.
And everyone's like, "Hey, you only get one save." So
yeah, I mean, well, I hope you like it. Is like you just—I don't know. I don't know why you'd handicap your own product, but what do I know?
It's unfortunate. I mean, the game visually, the game looks great, but if you know, like I said, there's not much in terms of you're basically attacking monsters over and over again,
right?
And you're, you know, trying to beat your time.
I think the three of us just solved this problem in the span of 5 minutes just by saying that it should have been a downloadable title.
Put
for
it in the market.
Yeah.
Put it in the market.
Or it should have been an extra mode attached to Revelations when Revelations.
Well, I mean, if there's not enough space on the cart, whatever. Like, whatever the situation is, like, fine. But, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, probably the biggest news in nerddom, I would say, that came out recently. I've avoided writing about this and we've kind of avoided talking about it because I think it had come out last time we had a podcast, is the DC is literally rebooting the DC. Like, it's not like they're rebooting a title or they're not, it's issue 101's a whole new start. They're literally every single title they have is going back to number one. Starting over, and it's as if the things that happened before that title never happened.
So,
to an extent, they have come back and said certain events did, like, weigh in. Like, they haven't said that, like, they happened, but what they said is, like, those events will have some kind of weight in their story. Like, the big one that I remember is Killing Joke, the Batman title where Robin dies and whatnot. That will somehow affect the universe that's starting right now, even though it's a title from the past.
My question is, and pardon me not knowing this, but I'm more of a Marvel guy.
Yeah, I think we, well, you and me both are kind of more Marvel guys, but I've gotten more into DC lately.
Cool. So you'll probably know this. Does this event occur due to something happening in the universe, or is it just like they're like, fuck it, it's done, no event occurs, meaning like, you know, the cosmic cube is ruptured and a new universe begins, or is it...
Okay, let me...
For non-comic book people, can you tell us what is affected in this DC universe by this sweeping change, like stuff that people like me would be familiar with?
Yeah, we're going to go through titles and stuff. So the event that's happening right now in DC, so the big events that have just happened in DC were the Blackest Day, Brightest Night, which was a big title, which I've been trying to get you guys to read at some point, I'm going to make you, is the big title around Green Lantern, which affected the entire universe, and characters came back, characters died, and there's this whole split in the universe, and it became Brightest Day, which was when everything was good again and things were happening. And right now there's an event going on called Flashpoint, and it has to do with Flash, and I'm pretty sure that it is affecting this thing, but I don't know that they're saying that this is the cause. I don't actually, because I'm not reading Flashpoint, I can't tell you for sure, and I haven't read that anywhere, but it wouldn't shock me if that's what led into it. So there's 52 titles. It's called the DC 52. They're resetting it. Everything's back to number one. All of the artists and writers are changing. And what I will say that is pretty amazing is there are some fucking heavy hitters coming to some of these titles. I mean, these are not like, oh, we're resetting it and we're just putting some people on. Like, they're bringing the big names, like, onto their main titles. So I'm going to run through them really quick. Some of these are people you guys have probably never heard of nor care too much about. And talk about who's taking over the books and why that might be significant. We've got Voodoo, which is a relatively new title. Number one, nobody you're going to know. Teen Titans. Scott Lobdell's taking over Teen Titans, which is a pretty big deal. He's a new writer for them. Superman number one, taken over by George Perez. Hawkman, Justice League. They're also doing this new thing called Dark, which is, and then they also have, there's Dark, and then there's, I'm going to run.
Are all the universes, is everything tied together in this one universe?
Yeah, DC's always been tied together. So everybody exists in a place.
Oh, okay.
They're trying to get the teens with a title called I, Vampire.
Wow.
It doesn't, you know, whatever. The covers look really good. The thing is, I have to give them credit for doing this, because this is not like, this really isn't DC doing an event. You know what I mean? Like,
okay.
And I'll compare it to the fact that Marvel announced that Uncanny's going away and that they're rebooting a couple series too.
Well, why do you think they're doing this?
Because comics are not selling. I mean, just to be dead honest, comics aren't selling like they should be or need to be. And I think part of the complaint for a lot of new readers is that there's so much fucking shit going on at all times across all titles. It's hard to, like, you really just kind of have to go like forego things and just say, well, I'm just going to start reading Green Lantern because I want to read Green Lantern, even though I just missed, you know, this massive universe changing title
right. That
just happened. You know, like, it's these events that they get into this event driven stuff. And when there's an event going on for Flash, Green Lantern and Superman all at the exact same time, all having bearings across other, like, how do you know what to get into at that point? So I think they're just saying, look, fresh start, come in, you can read comics, check it out.
I understand the logic behind it. It makes total sense. But at the same time, like, lifelong fans of those series, like a lot of people that have been reading since they were little kids, that's about the most insulting thing you can do to a comic book fan, to all of a sudden, like, let's say, just for instance, I've been reading Superman for 20 years.
Right.
And all the stories I know and love have now, in terms of canon, been erased and replaced with a new story. They're doing redesigns on a lot of the characters that I've been just kind of looking at.
Yeah.
And some of them are pretty cool, but some of them are also pretty fucking awful.
Yeah.
And I'm just like thinking to myself, how can you take a classic iconic character like Superman and spruce him up and make him look different? And it reminds me of like the death of Superman when they tried to like redesign.
Right. So, so here's what I would say is, like, I feel like that kind of shit, the death of Superman, where then there were seven Supermans and then they tried to explain it away later on in life, and now they're still holding on. Like, good writers like Geoff Johns have taken some of those characters and made them worthwhile in DCU, and then others are just like, it's just that I feel like that shits on a reader. more than this. Like, I don't, I'm not, this doesn't bother me. And I like a lot of the DC characters. Batman, love the history of Batman. But the fact that they're going to give it a shot and say, you know, here's a good chance to jump in and give it a shot. I don't know. It doesn't bother me as much.
Maybe they're almost saying, like, for all the old stuff, instead of saying, like, we're starting over, they could just be like, the end, you know?
Because they're not all total rewrite. There are redesigns either. Oh. It's only some of them that are redesigns. Some of them are remaining kind of classic. And like, so like Batman, The Dark Knight, which has always been a phenomenal series, they're actually giving the reins entirely to David Finch, art and writing. David Finch is the guy who did, what was it, Batman 500? I showed it to you guys. It was one of the bigger bigger ones. Phenomenal artist and a great writer. So he's taking over. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, some of their big, these big gun titles that you would worry about canon getting shit on, I feel like they're giving it to the writers that they know are going to be able to handle that deftly and say, okay, you know, here's how Killing Joke still is involved. There's with it, one exception, which you know about and we'll bring up in a second. So that's that. Aquaman is still going, giving the reins to Jeff Johns, who's going to be very busy after you hear in a second. And then Ivan Reis and Joe Prado, who are amazing artists. Wonder Woman is not dying. They're going to try and make Wonder Woman relevant again. They keep trying with it, and it just keeps failing miserably. But they're giving it to Brian Azzarello, who's a really great writer.
Wonder Woman's another one of those characters who's a lot like Thor, sort of like the misplaced god character. You know, I mean, she's basically, you know, she's this Amazonian, she's a princess, and it's very strange to put her in a modern setting and have it really work, at least, you know. She works with, you know, a group like the Justice League because they're all kind of, in a sense, you know, misplaced gods. But I don't know. Like, I can understand why that character doesn't resonate with a lot of, like, modern, like, a younger audience, you know.
Right. Green Lantern Corps by Peter Tomasi. I know some of these names don't mean anything to you guys, but I just figured we'd run through some of the bigger names. They're still... I think it's Jim Lee at... Is it Jim Lee? I think it's Jim Lee who has a hard-on for Blue Beetle, and they're giving him a reboot, too. So Blue Beetle number one's coming back. Tony Bedard and Iguara.
So just to clarify, are they going to retell these stories again, like origin stories and stuff like that, or is it just going to be...
They're not redoing... No, I mean, this isn't like, rebuy those books you already purchased and read with new people writing and drawing them. This is like... This is a complete... They are starting over. This is as if DC just became a thing, and all of these characters just entered your life.
So I mean,
so they are doing some origin stories.
Right.
So they're going to basically rewrite some of the characters' origins.
Mm-hmm.
That's gonna piss so
Batman
many
number
off.
One. They gave to Scott Snyder, who did American Vampire. I mean, like, these are phenomenal writers. Like,
but is Batman now going to be bitten by a vampire bat and have bat? No,
but I mean, like, I guess
that's not what they're doing.
I know. Comic books are different. Comic books have a different like thing about them. But just think about the movies. You know, like, how many times has Batman been rebooted in movies?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, or like when TV shows get remade, maybe they're trying that approach. You know,
it's true. But also, I think, you know, and this is just me bitching, but I think we've seen some characters' origin stories so many times that if we see them one more time, how many times have we seen Superman crash in that fucking comet?
Well, okay, so
and be raised by the Kents. It's like, that's just part of, like, if I have to read that in a comic again,
I think there are like 10 seasons of that you can go watch on the WB.
Jeff,
right,
seriously,
Jeff Johns is keeping Green Lantern. Sorry, there's a lot of titles. Deathstroke's getting his own title. There's 52. There's a lot of titles.
Damn.
There's 52 titles. That's why it's called the 52. Batwoman's coming back, which is good. Batwoman actually just got rebooted with a really great storyline, and I think it's the same writers are keeping it and doing and starting from number one.
Whatever happened to the mute Batgirl? That was like 10 years ago.
Batgirl?
Yeah, the mute one that didn't talk. She was like deaf mute.
I never read that one.
Oh, so good. She was like...
It wasn't... Was it when Oracle was art? It wasn't Barbara Gordon.
It wasn't Barbara Gordon. It was way, way, way after that. But this particular Batgirl was, I guess, trained to be an assassin, and she didn't speak or anything like that. And she wore a mask with no eye holes. I thought that was kind of cool.
That's cool.
Somewhere out there, a DC fan's listening to this and like screaming at me at the top of their lung.
Green Arrow's coming back with J.T. Krull. Detective Comics, which I think is one of the best long-running comics DC has.
They're rebooting Detective Comics?
Yeah, Tony S. Daniels taking over Detective Comics.
Dude, that's been going since, like, the 50s.
Yeah. I mean, but see, like, so, like, here's an example. Batman, that's a Batman comic, Detective Comics. And it's not starting out with, like, Batman's parents get shot. It's starting out with this character called the Gotham Ripper who's on the loose in Gotham killing people, and Batman's hunting him down to stop him.
Okay.
So it's not like everything is an origin story, but there are a couple characters that are getting origin stories done. And I know, like, you get tired of them, but I would also say that, like, when Geoff Johns did Green Lantern and redid his origin story, it was phenomenal and it was done really well. And I think if it's done with the right hands, it can be done well and worth reading.
No, I agree. I just don't want to see, like, you know, like I was just kind of kidding around, like, you know, now all of a sudden, since the writer of American Vampire is doing Batman, we're going to have this dark gothic, yeah. Like, Bruce Wayne's parents were walking down the dark alley when a man dressed in a dark cloak approached them from the darkness.
I mean, we'll see. American Vampire isn't that gothic, though. It's just kind of it's an interesting take on vampires. But, I agree. I understand. But what if this wasn't a reboot and that guy took over Batman? I mean, you're going to get the same kind of storytelling with Batman at that point.
True.
He just now he kind of has the reins freed up a little of 70 years of history that he's got to write with.
It's true. I mean, it had to happen at some point because comic readers are, you know, like myself, I feel overwhelmed. Like, I read X-Men for 20 years, and now I'm like, hey, I would love to go back and read some X-Men. I don't even know
the amount of history
where.
That's involved. Oh, it's insane.
I stopped reading 8 or 9 years ago.
I usually tell people to get trades. Like, get into some trades, find the titles you like, and then go start reading those titles. And you kind of just have to jump in, like, regardless if you're in the middle of a story or not. The one that's making everybody poop themselves is Batgirl is getting rebooted, Batgirl number one, and Barbara Gordon is Batgirl again, meaning that, and you don't probably know this.
That, to me, is amazing.
She lost her ability to walk. She was called Oracle for a long time. She basically ran this massive computer system, and now for the Birds of Prey title line and for Batman, yeah. Right? And now she can walk again, and she's Batgirl.
Like, it was one of the only things in comic book continuity that they never shied
they
away
never
from. She got shot. She got shot by the Joker, lost her ability to walk, and DC was like, you know what? She's never going to walk again.
Was she in the game, the Batman?
Yeah, she was.
Yeah. Game?
She was the one you talked to.
I remember.
She's the one you talked to.
Okay, yeah.
The good thing about it, though, is Gail Simone is taking over the story, who's a strong female force in comics, and it'll be interesting to see her do Batgirl with Barbara Gordon, I think.
I will read that. I'll pick
it up. Is that related to the commissioner?
Yes.
The commissioner's daughter? Okay. Yeah.
And I think that, like, you know, I was listening to the iFanboy to kind of refresh on this stuff before we started talking about it, and the one thing they brought up that I kind of was like, that's a good point, is people are freaking out over this because they're like, why would they, you know, that's one thing you never fuck with. She got shot and then, you know, that's DC. That's what DC does. And the iFanboy guys were like, yeah, like, okay, so you're okay with the alien dude who crash lands, you know, or, and like is Superman and gets his back broken and is supposedly dead and then comes back. Like, you're okay with that. You're okay with Batman getting killed, going back through time and then traveling back forward through time so he can make it back and still be in the universe and be Batman. Like, you're okay with all that, but the fact that they're going to make a girl walk again and be Batgirl, that's where you lose it. That's where you've, like, written
that's
it off.
Where I draw the line.
Yeah, and it just, it's like, you know, it just seems like a ridiculous thing to draw a line on. I'm interested in it. I think it's a great writer. I think it's a cool twist on the story, so we'll see what they do. This is the origin story you're talking about. Superman,
oh Jesus!
Action Comics is getting redone, number one, and they gave it to Grant Morrison. Now, Grant Morrison is a phenomenal writer, written many very good comics. The thing I would point you to that he has already done for Superman was he did a run called All-Star Superman that was phenomenal. So the cover's really cool. It's Superman in, like, 40s jeans. I think they're actually going to tell... No one really knows exactly what the stories are yet, but I think they're actually going to tell it as if we're in the 40s and not current day.
Oh, interesting.
Possibly. Who knows? I mean, that's kind of what it looks like. But he's holding up this, like, massive boulder, and he's, like, in this kind of raggedy uniform.
Cool.
And then the biggest, probably, news of team that they handed over is Justice League is getting a big reboot. I think they're trying to compete with the Avengers, who I think just dust the floor with Justice League on a weekly basis. And they gave it to Geoff Johns, who's their, you know, go-to writer for everything. And then the guy doing art first time back on a long run of comics, Jim Lee is going to be drawing it.
Interesting. I'm down. I used to be a Jim Lee fan.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say Joe Madden, and I was going to poop my pants.
No, not Joe Madden. But it's Jim Lee.
He's out.
First time Jim Lee is going to be drawing, like, permanently on a comic since he did something for Superman like a while ago. He's done a lot.
They're giving him a lot of money.
He's just, well, he runs the freaking company. I don't think he.
And he gets a lot of money.
He doesn't need that much. But it's an interesting thing. You know, I give them credit. I actually laugh because Marvel, like I said, is kind of following suit. You know, of course, because if one does one, the other has to do it too. But not in the same way. They're doing it a little differently and not quite with as much, like, gusto, if you will. This is kind of DC saying, no, like, screw it. We're done. We're restarting everything. And some titles, like Secret Six, is going away, which was a really good title. And it's getting replaced with one called Suicide Squad, you know, which is like a bad guy's title. Like, it follows bad. Harlequin's the.
It sounds like a good way to relaunch a brand, like you said, for people that always wanted to get into comics, but were intimidated by sort of like the
amount
of stuff.
Did you say Harlequin is the leader?
Yeah.
Of a team?
Suicide Squad, yeah.
She must have ranked up since the olden days.
I'll show you the cover in a minute, but yeah.
She was one of the few characters that actually originated in the animated series and they brought in to actual continuity. I remember that was a big deal a long time ago.
But I think it's interesting. I give it credit. You know, there's a few. I'm not going to pick up all 52 titles, obviously, but there are some that I will probably read. I think Green Lantern I've gotten into now, and if Geoff Johns is keeping it, I'll do it. I'll probably read Grant Morrison's Superman. I'll probably read Batgirl and probably multiple of the Batman titles because that's the series that I really hold to in there. The other big news that they announced was that all of their comics will be available digitally on release day, which is not how it operates now. So every Wednesday, if you want to go digital, if you wanted to go 100% digital, DC is now letting you do it. They're available immediately on release day for full price. So same price digitally as it is in paper, but after a month, they drop a dollar.
Okay.
So if it's one of those titles that you want to get on release day every day, but you don't want to have the paper in your house, you can get it on release day. You can read it. They're a part of that Comixology app, which is phenomenal. I think that's the one they're going to be releasing on. I don't think they're releasing their own like DC Universe app. And then after a month, their prices will drop a dollar, which I think is pretty fair.
Cool.
And I think it's a good sign that, you know, it's the same with music. Like, we know people who own record stores, and it's a bummer that digital music does so well. But sorry, you know, that's kind of how things are going.
It's the way of things.
Yeah, like... Yeah. I love my comics, and I'll probably still read some paper ones, but this might interest me enough to read some digitally that I might not want to pick up in paper because I don't know if I'm going to want to keep them or what I would want
to
do.
You start to run out of space, and that's the, you know, we've talked about that dozens of times when you know, you have to cut down your collections because you have
all full
closets and extra rooms filled with that your passions. So it's like, you know, sometimes you just gotta get rid of it all.
So my only question is, Scott, is this something that would make you pick up a DC title or no?
Yeah, I mean,
like, you're kind of the non.
We talked
guy about
it, I think, last time we did the podcast, and that I do kind of I'm interested in getting into comics, and I would be one of those people that would be like, man, I would like to start reading something, but you know, with like 500 episodes, you know, 500 issues behind me, I don't know how I would ever start on something,
right?
You know. And like that's why I asked before if there was like currently one app to rule them all in terms of comic readers,
right?
Something like a Google or an Amazon that would be transportable to many devices. And
the only holdout company now is Marvel.
Marvel does have their subscription.
They have their own app and subscriptions, but they're the only holdout from being on like a one app platform. Marvel will not give their comics.
Yeah,
that's what I would urge you. They give away free month trials to try it out. I would say do that. Pick up a title, something like, I just read like every single X-23 issue in like an afternoon.
I would suggest Astonishing X-Men.
That
Joss
too.
Joss Whedon run.
That too. But yeah, I mean, just pick up a title that, you know is going to be great and go for it.
I would also say that with Comixology and the Marvel app, if you had a tablet or you had a laptop that, you know, they both are in like the Chrome marketplace or they're in Android or iPhone or whatever. It's not that hard to keep up with the two apps, so and it doesn't cost money. You know, they're both free apps. You just buy what you buy.
Yeah, I'm just looking for you know, like that sort of cross-platform support and like the longevity. I mean, like I would invest in purchasing the comics, but I want to make sure that I would still have access to them.
And I might be totally wrong. The Comixology one actually downloads them to your computer or your tablet, and I want to say they're PDFs, but I'm not positive.
That's pretty cool.
That would be – the portability would be nice. But all right, well, that is the news. We got a bunch of reviews, so we are going to take like a two-minute break if that's all right with everybody.
Let's do it.
And come back.
Cool.
See ya. Do some reviews.
I'm stoked for these.
Let's do
it. I am too. I'm stoked because two of these I didn't play, so I get to ask about them. And then this one we've all played and been pooping our pants. I've already done a pre-review on the site, which I thought was pretty much my most brilliant article ever written.
Hey, a lot of people clicked it.
Yeah.
So why not?
I will not even paraphrase. I will quote the article right now. The article said, Trenched, first impressions. And then you clicked it to open, and it said, just fucking buy it. It's a mech game by Double Fine. Why are you still reading this? Go buy the game.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I'm going to apologize publicly for being skeptical of this game.
I think a lot of people were, and that's what kind of bums me out. I had to like do a lot of convincing to some of my friends. Like,
yeah.
No, it's, you know, it's really a lot of fun, and it's like you get just as much value as a full price title. And everyone's like, yeah, sure, get the fuck out of here.
I think somewhere along the line, the phrase tower defense came up in my brain. I don't even know if I read that somewhere.
Right.
And once I heard that, it kind of soured my outlook on it, because traditionally they do a lot of, you know, there's a lot of kind of story narrative things. Like, that's kind of what I think they are popular for.
I still think that exists though in this game.
And it does. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's what kind of gets lost in the shuffle when this game is being pitched in the elevator.
So do you want to give a brief preview or a review of what this game is about?
I will say that it is sort of a tower defense game, but mm-hmm. it's also more of like a horde mode, you know, at the same time. It's not like, it's not so focused on like enemies funneling through like a, you know, like a specific tube, and right. you just put in turrets and mow them down. And then it also takes a lot from those like old school mech games that we used to play on the PC, where everything is customizable, and you can
probably very heavily Mech Warrior, I would say, is what we've been pulling from.
I keep thinking about that game that that we played on my computer back in the day, where it was just an
Battletech,
just like, I think it was a Sierra Dynamics game.
It was, yeah.
Just two robots, no graphics.
It was like, wireframed, wasn't it?
Wireframe arena, and then you just build
the
robot.
It was a hell of a lot of fun.
Oh, it was
the
so
two
much
robots
fun.
Just brawl. Yeah, it's brilliant.
Well, I mean, the story behind this game, the actual plot of it, is pretty awesome. I mean, you play as one of four Marines. You can choose, you know, there's a guy from Poland. There's like the guy who's the son of the main.
Yeah.
You know, legless character.
Can I tell you real quick the way I pick the character? Because it doesn't matter who you pick.
No, it doesn't.
I actually read the bios and I was like, I like that guy.
I did too. I picked the Polish guy. Which one did you go with?
I went with the British guy.
I was the Polish guy as well.
Something I read in the bio I really
liked. I read the bio and I was like, this is awesome. And I picked the Polish guy.
Polish guy's kind of a dick. I like
it. Yeah.
But the story is really cool. It takes place, the beginning of the story takes place right after World War I. And the war is kind of stretching on, and two radio operators overhear this strange transmission, and they both get superhuman intelligence. And one of them who had his legs crushed by a tank during the war, he decides to use his newfound superhuman intelligence to build mechanized legs for himself and for other soldiers that have been wounded in the war. And then the other radio operator kind of goes crazy, and he builds the first real television set, and then kind of expands from there, and these television sets called tubes become monsters, and then he uses them to take over.
Kind of a statement on what television is doing to our generation.
Yeah,
it is
yeah,
subtle.
It definitely is. Yeah. And you kind of pick up where World War II would be taking place. A lot of the same World War II technology is around. There's still like B-17s and carriers and things like that. But now there's these tube monsters versus these mechs, which you and your friends pilot, or trenches. As
they call them trenches.
Trenches, yeah. Which is where the name comes
from.
So I'll talk briefly about the kind of gameplay, or the, I don't know about gameplay, that's the wrong word. So the kind of mechanic of the mech itself is you've got, you know, the basic body types. You've got a light, a medium, and a heavy. Where it gets interesting is not just the fact that you can upgrade your weapons and what kind of weapons you can carry and where you can carry them, because you only have, you have three slots, a maximum of three slots on right and left.
Right,
yeah.
And the different levels, light, medium, and heavy, have different amount of slots. Some of them will have three on the left or two. One, some will have one and one. Some will only have two on the left. But what that affects is what kind of, what they call encampments that you can buy, which are the turrets, essentially, mm-hmm. in a tower defense game. And I think that's where it gets really interesting. You can build these really crazy systems of mechs where maybe you've got, maybe you're all long range, but then you just load up with like machine guns and shotgun turrets and you just circle around the area and throw those things down.
We played a game with Ash and Derek, and they went as like extremely heavy soldiers with like giant weapons. And I just made this tiny little sort of engineering mech and put sprinter legs on and just ran around the battlefield collecting all the salvage to build like massive turrets, like, and they could just knock the guys down as the turrets were like weakening
there,
everything.
And then there was a game we played together, I think the three of us and Micah, and I actually got stuck. My mech, it was the weird bug.
Oh, I remember,
And my mech couldn't move anymore. And what was amazingly awesome about it, and I ended up having a blast because I was like on a ridge. What ended up being awesome is the legs I had on were called quick load legs. And when you hit the button, you like basically.
You entrench almost.
Yeah, you like entrench. You like hunch down into the ground and you can't move anymore, but your weapons reload at like a massive pace. And I had three machine guns on one side and a artillery rifle on the other. So I just like camped down and then was just like laying into everything that ran past me.
And we built support turrets all around
you. You guys
to help
just
you
built
stay alive.
Support turrets like around me and I ended up playing out the whole game.
He can't do much.
But it was like, it was funny because it was a bug, but it was a bug that made me play differently. And then I ended up having a blast doing it regardless. Like I was still was like, oh God, that was so much fun.
This is one of these games that is ends up being really fun alone and then gets like orders of magnitude better with friends.
I was going to ask, so like that's one of the things I've wanted to do. So co-op, we should say there's co-op to this whole game, but it really is just co-op in the single player. So there's not different matches, there's not other stuff that happens, but you can play through with up to four players in co-op on the same matches. And then the other cool thing they do is a stat tracking. So once you've become friends with somebody and played with them, they actually keep them in your. They're still listed as soldiers that you've played in your unit.
So
So you can actually stat track against everybody. You can see what everybody's doing and like kind of watch them. But it doesn't happen until you've played with them. But I was going to ask because I kept thinking like one of the things I wanted to do in co-op was just make an engineer and just throw down encampments. But what I've noticed is really hard is collecting scrap in co-op. And I feel like if I made that character and then didn't get the scrap that I needed, I would be screwed.
I found a way to make it work. And the advantage of the engineer is that you can build those.
The collectors.
The magnet collectors. So when we played a level where I knew you guys were sort of hitting guys at a choke point, I just put the magnets in the choke points.
So you got the scrap.
Yeah. And then I kind of feel bad, but it's the engineer's job. I kind of just like stole the salvage from you.
Yeah.
Like you would get into a massive brawl and I would just run straight by you and go pick up all the salvage as you were killing the guys.
I think that was understood though. It's like, you know, we saw you zipping around and it's like we have gigantic cannons and you have a machine gun. So
but,
like
the engineers sort of like sort of what they benefit from is the ability to build artillery encampments.
Yeah.
Which is tremendous in the game, especially in a...
And they're the only type that can build artillery.
Right. Yeah, so in the context of a multiplayer game, throwing down some artillery basically puts like two more soldiers on the field with you. And it's like, it's kind of awesome.
We should say Double Fine sense of humor throughout this game.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, just like...
Storytelling, art
laughing
style.
Laughing while I'm playing it. The art style is awesome.
It's great.
You know, and $15 friggin' dollars.
It's well worth it. The level of customization isn't just reserved for like the guns and the legs and stuff on your trench. It's actually your character himself.
Yeah, you can. Yeah,
you unlock different helmets and different hats and different coats.
The last game I played, I had a Pith helmet and an Anchor shirt on.
Yeah, I mean, you can be ridiculous. We were wearing like tuxedos with top hats
and tiki heads.
Yeah, I unlocked like gold plating for my trench, so I had this like blinged out trench with a freaking suit on. It's awesome.
Would you agree that because of the variety of the weapons that, like, I feel like the trenches themselves can be very expressive because they did a good job of designing like the weapons and the different like parts that you put on your guy, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
like when you equip two giant cannons, you actually have two giant cannons.
Oh,
and it looks
massive.
Yeah.
Like when you're doing something ridiculous, like Micah put six machine guns on his his trench, and he just looks like a mobile like gun fortress, and it's ridiculous.
Yeah,
you know?
Especially when he like, you know, hits the entrench button, and then he's just basically a pillbox, you know, sitting there laying down fire.
And cool effects where like if you die and you're in co-op, your teammate just has to come save you. If you die and you're in single player, they actually give you, I think it's two chances to come back.
Yeah, I think so, if not more.
You pound it, basically gives you a random button that you have to pound on, and then you like revive yourself and keep playing.
And I think we made the comment we played a few times that even something like as simple as the explosions were awesome in the game.
Yeah.
Like the action is very vivid. Yeah.
It's crazy.
And they make things so simply easy. So like inviting your friends just requires you to go into the quote unquote radio room.
And they built something to do that, which is awesome.
And hit X. And it like you go into this radio room and you hit X, and like everybody in your party is immediately in your game.
Yeah, that's what I said in my review. The intermission, like what you do between missions when you're hanging out with your friends, is probably the most genius thing I've seen in any game ever, because you're on an aircraft carrier. Everyone's trenches are on board with you. You can inspect everyone's stuff. You can hang out, look at everybody's stupid costumes.
Yeah.
You can like, you know, flap your arm around like a maniac, and you can like kind of plot your strategy. And it's not just a load screen. You're in an actual 3D
environment.
It kind of
takes the idea of a lobby and kind of just turns it on its head. And they're like, no, we're going to make this part of the experience.
Yeah.
And it is probably one of the best lobbies I've ever seen. And then you think of like, a game like if Call of Duty or something could do that, like on a, you know, in a base with all the soldiers standing
around.
Yeah,
you could like run over to your guy and see what loadout he's got.
Yeah,
and like
why not? You know, sitting at a base waiting to go out.
I mean, not to say this pretty much every time a Double Fine game comes out, but they again hit it out of the park. I mean, the thing is just
the thing that they're really good at is they're good at taking an idea, a concept, and building everything around to support that. You don't look at anything in this game and go like, why do we do this? Everything has a purpose and everything makes sense.
So does anybody here, if Tim Schafer came out tomorrow and said, you know what, I'm never going to release a box title again, this is going to be what I do until I die, problem?
Well, my only problem would be Psychonauts. And I'd be like, if you can make that as a DLC, even if you want to release that in chapters, I think people would go for that.
Well, and here's me just being greedy. Like, as soon as I finished Trench, I was like, holy crap, I want more of it immediately.
I think this
right
is
now.
Guaranteed to have DLC, don't you think?
I think so. I haven't looked at the sales numbers for it yet, but I assume it's doing well.
You know
it's
what it did for me? I want a fucking MechWarrior game now.
Oh, yeah.
I want like a good... I want you know what I was saying earlier? We were playing a four-player campaign literally today before we started this.
Yes.
and the thing that I said was, I would be totally... Or no, I said it at lunch to Chrissy. I would be totally happy if, like... Or I would be ecstatic, I think, if a company like BioWare made a mech game. Mm. Where it was, like, story, just, like, an awesome story, but I got to fucking customize the shit out of a mech and run it, and that was the world I got to run around in. You know, like use the mech as a platform to tell me a story, and not what it usually is, which is use a mech to make a mech game with mechness, with mech things inside of it.
I see your point,
but that probably won't happen. I would be happy with just a MechWarrior 19 or whatever the hell they're on.
I hear you. I mean, that was like the old Wing Commander style. Was have an amazing narrative and just use that amazing narrative and kind of break it up with like, you know, decent flight sim stuff. I mean, those games were great back in the day.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, if like, imagine what if you could do like, what was the? It was a movie called
Robot Jocks.
Yes. What if they took Robot Jocks and made that a game that was good?
Because that, I mean, but that's like, kind of like an arena concept, though.
Right.
You know?
It was a story about like, so you're. It's not a story about you as a mech. It's a story about you as a pilot. and like what you're doing. The fights that you're getting into and the maybe some politics and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, what you're doing to fight and to play is you're getting in a mech and like battling other mechs.
I feel that
would be rad.
It'd be great.
I should start a studio.
You're right. I think these mech games traditionally don't focus on the people in the mechs.
The mech
becomes a person.
How badass would it be in a mech game to actually have, you know, go into a giant mech battle in a post-apocalyptic city surrounded by other mechs with characters that you kind of learned all about with great stories and all piloting different mechs. And
I hope BioWare listens to our podcast.
Poop all over myself.
We don't need another Dragon Age. Mass Effect 3 is the end.
Do need another Jade Empire, but I will settle for a mech game.
I don't know that it sold well enough for you to get one.
I think that's part of what we liked. I mean, we didn't like a whole lot about it, but what we liked about the Lost Planet series was the ability to like get in the mech, get out of the mech, pull parts off the mech, and then fight with them. You know, it's the stuff like that differentiates like mech games from like the person and the robot.
Yeah, no, that game was actually a lot of fun.
So speaking of Lost Planet, a game that looks a lot like it to me because I don't know anything about the title or what it's about.
Oh, yes.
Red Faction Armageddon. You guys Redbox this?
I'm going to tell you why this game is not Dead Space because I feel like that's the first thing that...
Is that what it compares to? I literally don't know anything about this game other than the fact that at Comic-Con I stood inside of a very large mech and Melissa and about 40 other people took a picture of me when it opened up and I was inside of it.
There you go.
That's cool. Yeah.
So I take it there are mechs.
So you play as a bald man. And I don't know anything about the universe.
Kind of reminds me of Vin Diesel.
He's a little Vin Diesel.
What's that movie? Pitch Black. Pitch Black. Black.
He kind of reminds like that. No, it's well voice acted. I didn't have any problems with that. But
Derek is sort of the keeper of Red Faction lore.
He knows a lot about it.
And he's played
them
all.
How many games are there? Three?
This is the fourth game.
Fourth?
So here's the deal. I think Red Faction on PC, the first two games started out as sort of linear FPS, kind of like maybe in the style of those old like Star Wars games where you just run through and gun dudes down. But I think the basic premise is that people are on Mars. And then I don't know what exactly happened in the first two games, but in the third game, like this Earth force comes to Mars and tries to regulate everything. And then sort of the people start an uprising called the Red Faction. And then...
basically Freedom Fighters.
Yep, Freedom Fighters. And they sort of drive out the... I think they're called the EDF in that game. They drive out the EDF. And then everything's cool on Mars. And then in this particular game, let's see... What happened in this game?
You play
the plot. See, that's
the
thing.
Play as the grandson of the old main protagonist.
You're always like the Mason is the last name of the character that you are traditionally playing as, and that like I wrote in the review, they're kind of like the Belmonts, where like you're always in the middle of.
A Mason.
Is this the first Red Faction you guys have played, or is this the
second
or
third?
This is my
first Red Faction.
I played Red Faction Guerrilla.
That was the one before this.
Which
is
the one before. And the thing that makes this interesting is that game was an open world destruction, kind of like, go over here. We need you to demolish this building. The game was very heavy on like demolishing structures, like pulling down buildings, like pulling down satellite dishes and stuff like that.
Okay.
This game, at least the first half of it, kind of goes the route of, or kind of like dark, like everything's dark. Like
It's almost like a survival horror game.
So it kind of starts out like a little Dead Spacey.
I want to say that all the scenes I saw at Comic-Con and at PAX were like big battles, though. It didn't seem like a survival horror title at all.
Well, they like to show off the mech scenes where you're in the mech suit a lot because everybody likes mech suits, right? Yeah. We just got done talking about them for an hour.
I don't want a mech suit.
Oh, you want a full-on...
I want a fucking mech.
This is a mech suit.
I would say the mech suits... specifically probably account for maybe like 10% of the game.
Percentage. But you basically start the whole problem in this game. You activate an artifact that sort of awakens this ancient race that was sleeping within Mars.
And that's kind of the thing about the Dead Space is that they sort of have an uncanny resemblance to Necromorphs.
They look exactly like Necromorphs.
You just said a thing about the Dead Space.
Like the reference to Dead Space.
That's the thing about Dead Space that you're talking about. Yeah,
okay. Like maybe like when they were making Red Faction Guerrilla, they were like, hey, we know that Just Cause like makes a lot of money and we're going to do that. And then this time around, they're like, hey, that Dead Space is pretty cool. Let's try some of that.
Yeah, yeah.
Is this made by? Is it Capcom?
This is a THQ.
Published it.
The game, but I mean, like, although I'm knocking it for the Dead Space thing, it deserves a lot of credit because it does begin to do its own thing in the game.
Yeah, and I ended up actually having a really good time.
So you guys co-opt, right?
We didn't co-op through the campaign.
Oh, you didn't?
The campaign is single player.
It has a pretty strong narrative. You play as Mason the whole time, and you're basically the bulk of the game is you scrambling to save your ass. You are getting chased and hunted and you know, various objectives throughout.
Yeah, the monsters want to kill you, obviously. And then the people that you're with, like your colonists or whatever, they want to kill you because they find out that you're responsible for unleashing these aliens, or I guess not aliens, but they're underground aliens or whatever. And they're
always sneaking it in.
Underground aliens.
And then, so generally you're just kind of like the bad guy and you're trying to set things right or whatever. Sort of what sets this game apart from other similar games is at the end of the last game, you recover an ancient piece of tech called the
Hammer of Dawn.
No, what is this thing called? so bad. It's called the Nanoforge.
There you go.
I think in the previous game, the Nanoforge was used to destroy things, but in this game, it's used to rebuild things. So they still keep this aspect of like semi-destructible environments. But a lot of the game sort of takes place like in more underground kind of confined conditions. So there are structures, but like if you're fighting enemies and you blow up the walkway, like they tumble off the walkway,
right?
You know, the stuff tumbles on them, you blow them up, and then like obviously you need to go across that walkway. So you have like a little device on your arm that can then rebuild the environment after you destroy it. So it's kind of
really caters to the part of your mind that just love, like little kid that just loves shattering and destroying things.
Right.
Like if you see a building out in the distance and you have a big ass gun, you can knock that entire fucking building down with everybody inside, and it looks spectacular. And the physics are great too.
And they actually build mechanics to make that work. Like you start out the game with like nothing, no abilities, like crappy weapons, but they give you a magnet gun. So, and all you do with the magnet gun is you attach an anchor point and then a destination point, and the anchor point pulls itself into the destination. So when you run out of ammo, you just end up like trying to like throw like debris and boulders at the aliens just to get them out of your way. And then that's you can fling the aliens like off into the distance too. So if you run out of ammo, you can just kind of throw them off a cliff and have them tumble down. But the game, sort of like it, we were talking before the podcast, sort of like Enslaved, it starts out hard and then ends up a little easier than it started because you start to acquire better weapons and better abilities. So you kind of have he has a wristband that enables certain powers.
Right.
You can do like a shockwave, which is a stun ability. You sort of have like a what is it called? Like it's like a force push almost.
Yeah, yeah.
You have like this kind of force push ability,
you put a force bubble that makes you like pretty much invulnerable.
You can put like a bubble shield around yourself. So like a lot of your battles kind of get creative in the sense that at any time you can take any four weapons you want into the battle, and then you have these four abilities as well. And depending on your combination of the two, you can come up with some pretty creative solutions to the problems.
I mean, there's
the
achievements for like kill 700 guys in 1 second, and by the end of the game, you will pull it off because you are just like you become basically like a super Jedi of death.
And that's where the game takes a departure from something like a Dead Space, where like it really turns into like an action flick, but like a good popcorn movie in the sense that like you're just like, because the guy, he's fast, not slow like Isaac. He's super quick. Like he can roll, he can dodge. Yeah, like he's got the bubble. Like guys come up to you and you just obliterate them with the force ability. So it kind of turns into like almost like a ninja film where like 20 guys swarm you at once. And you're just kind of turning in all directions, like pulling out different weapons and kind of blasting the guys.
And graphically, they did a spectacular job. Like this game is one of those games that unfortunately got released at a weird time. I think it got released pretty much during E3, which is the worst time you can ever release a game.
Hey, let's release a game during when all games are getting announced.
It's like playing a soccer game at the same time where there's,
FIFA.
Yeah. So it... Unfortunately, I don't think it got the respect and buzz that it deserved. It got solid reviews across the board, like typically like eights, eight and a halves. And And we played the multiplayer as well together.
It's like a horde mode that's what they have in there.
Yeah, they put it in a horde mode that's pretty much just like Gears horde mode. Big thing is you can take in, you know, you have all your powers this time, and you have all like crazy, crazy weaponry that you can bring with you.
And what is becoming common in these types of games is that the upgrades and abilities that you earn in the mm-hmm. multiplayer transfer back and forth to the single player. So if you're having a tough time,
good.
If you're having a tough time in single player, like let's say you started out on Insane, you could go into multiplayer, play with your friends, like boost up your upgrade wheel a little bit, and then go back into the game a little stronger than you were before to continue.
That's what happened when, because you guys were ahead of me.
Mm-hmm.
I played, you know, that crazy 2 hours, 3 hours of horde with you guys, and then I went back and I had enough money in credit, because the credits carry over as well. I had enough credits to buy, like, you know, tons and tons
of stuff.
You have
to, like, earn this, like, salvage, this money to be to in order to upgrade your abilities and whatnot.
But all in all, definitely Red Faction Armageddon was a surprise.
So you Redboxed it.
I Redboxed it.
You?
I Redboxed it as well.
Would you buy it?
I mean, I don't. I feel like I experienced everything that I needed to experience.
I would buy
How many days did you rent it?
I had it for about a week.
I had it for 2 days.
Jesus, really?
Yeah.
But you're off right now.
I'm off. Right now. I had it for 48
hours. How many hours of actual gameplay do you think you did?
I played about probably 10 total.
Okay.
I think the campaign is like a pretty solid 10 hours.
Is Redbox $2 a day?
$2 a day
for games. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Totally worth it.
My only knock against this game is that. And I think it's something that I'm starting to get angry with a lot of games is when a game breaks its own rules, right? So I said all these nice things about like how your character is fast, and there's lots of weapons, you have fun abilities to use, and like that's all awesome. There are a lot of sequences towards the end of the game where it's like stand in this boat and man the turret, and like you just now you're like on this turret and you're trying to like gun down the enemies while your teammate is like trundling this boat through, you know, like a lava pit or something, and you're like, what the hell is going on? Just let me get off the boat, the turret, and shoot my rockets, you know?
That was annoying.
And there's like a lot of stuff like that, but then that stuff is also interspersed in with a couple of, there's like maybe four or five vehicle sequences too, which is interesting because that's almost like the polar opposite, because those vehicles, like the mech suit, are so overpowered that it's almost like your retaliation for everything that's happened previously in the game.
No, it is.
Yes.
I don't think it's possible to die. Like when you're in the spider walker.
Yeah, you climb into this massive spider walker, like something out of like Attack of the Clones or whatever, and you just got this beam laser that just obliterates
everything. You just walk through the fucking level and everything dies.
But it's so gratifying because of the destructible environments, and it's like, thank you for putting this in the game. It's like so much fun.
Yeah,
so worth a rent. Definitely worth a rent. You might, if you were really into Red Faction, probably worth a buy. It seems like a good game. Solid
gameplay. I would like to spend more time with the multiplayer components.
We'll have to see what Derek says too. We'll talk to him.
Yeah,
and see what
I know
he
was a big fan. I
think fans of Red Faction will not be disappointed.
They will not be.
They will not be appointed.
I appoint you.
Fans of just like shooters in general, like
we'll have fun.
Yeah, I mean, if this is something, I mean, maybe not full retail, but if it goes down to $40, worth your time. Like, if you're just casually interested, it's worth a rent.
Do you get more than one save?
Yeah, you do. Actually, this is like Dead Space. This is a New Game Plus kind of game, so you can take...
They give me money?
No, this is like, you. When you finish the game, you can start a new run
with your
all of your abilities, and
in
the replay of the game, you have access to cheats, and then you also have access to a weapon called Mr. Toots.
Yes, this is not a joke.
Do you want to explain what Mr. Toots is?
I think Mr. Toots was based on I can't remember his name right now and it escapes me, but there was a really popular internet video that came out last year, and it was somebody buys a unicorn through the mail, and he's a really adorable little unicorn, and except for he farts rainbows that disintegrate people, and it was... We'll look it up in just a second because it's pretty funny. And this guy cannot control this unicorn's rainbow farts, and he ends up disintegrating a bunch of humans.
Wow.
And they ended up bringing Mr. Toots the unicorn into the game, and you can control the rainbow farting unicorn, and he disintegrates people.
Sweet.
Yeah. So, I mean, if anything, that's a reason to finish the game and start a second playthrough.
So, from a fun game that you guys had a blast playing to another game that Ash played.
Oh, mercy.
It finally came out. Ash has had his pre-order for 7 years. Or 18 years.
10 years,
however long
15
it is.
Years.
Oh, man.
you went in the GameStop with your crusty old yellow receipt and you got Duke Nukem Forever, which is a lie. You actually rented it, didn't you?
I didn't buy it because I had actually already I broke my rule of not really reading reviews before I review a game. It was the Duke Nukem reviews were impossible to miss because my Twitter feed was just like people swearing for 4 or 5 days straight. And I don't know what strange masochistic part of my psyche made me go out and actually rent this, but I red boxed it literally for 24 hours.
Were you instantly teleported back to 1998?
Well, that's the thing. If this game came out when it was supposed to come out, it might have been okay.
Right.
There were so many.
So they didn't do an homage.
They didn't. The problem with Duke Nukem Forever, which is the game we're talking about, because I don't think we announced it. Yeah. We're talking about Duke Nukem Forever. The problem with the game was it. I think there were too many hands in the cookie jar by the time the folks at Gearbox actually got a hold of it. You know, it had been in development for over a decade. And. Yeah, well over a decade, which is crazy.
They couldn't make chicken salad is what you're trying to say.
And, you know, there were so many balance problems. There were so many problems with just the level design. And, like, honestly, the best part about the game is the introduction to the game. Like, the load screen is pretty badass. It has, like, I think Megadeth wrote the title track to it. And it's Duke at a casino rolling some dice and, you know, just being a badass.
Yeah.
And that got me all fired up. Every time I'd start it, I'd be like, yeah, let's kick some fucking ass. Let's kick some ass. And I'd play for 5 minutes, and like I would just be like, what the fuck am I playing? You know, just screaming and yelling.
Do you think the gaming landscape has changed since 1996?
That's an excellent question, Scott. I think a lot has changed. I think we've come to expect a lot more from games. The game doesn't really have ample AI.
I think you mentioned something about ice skating, rollerblading.
Yeah, Duke controls like he has, like, he's wearing a pair of rollerblades.
He might be 96.
He might. He probably has like pink rollerblades.
Tube socks.
And the rollerblades are like made of lead. I think I said in my review, like, lead rollerblades with square wheels. Like, like jumping is just like, and the problem is they're like, we're going to put a bunch of like platforming sequences and just,
oh,
you know,
and you love platforming sequences.
We're going to make you jump. This is the one that I lost my fucking mind. We're going to make you jump on top of crates that are floating in water. The water is electrified and you have to jump from crate to crate to crate to crate to crate to crate. Problem is there's about 15 crates you got to jump on, and if you fall in at any moment, you can't get out, and you got to start, and you die, and the load time is about a minute.
Oh my god.
And I'm not exaggerating. I literally, because I freaked out so bad, I timed it, and it's anywhere between like 38 seconds and a minute load time every time you die.
You know, there's nothing like a first-person platforming where you can't see your feet or what you're landing on.
Yeah, yeah. And then there was...
well, Scott, in real-life first-person, you only see your hands, a small portion of your forearms.
That's true. And the part that, not to just, you know, dwell on how bad it is, but the part that I lost my shit, near the end of the game, there's a sequence where you have to blow up a dam. So that they think it's going to be a brilliant idea to make you have a lot of swimming underwater sequences where you have to swim from place to place and there's a breath meter, but there's no actual swim mechanic to make you swim any faster. So you're pretty much just like running underwater in slow motion and you're like looking for these fucking air bubbles. And then the monsters just charge you at full speed and some of your guns don't work underwater and then you're drowning. And you don't know what the fuck. There's no map.
Breaking your
There's
own
no
game
map.
Mechanic.
There's no map in the game to tell you where the fuck to go. So you're just swimming through darkness, murky death, drowning over and over. And every time you die, there's a minute load time.
Is this better or worse than the underwater sequences of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
It's on par.
Oh, my God.
This game, if I were to equate it to physical punishment, would
okay.
be if you go to Walmart and there's a 400-pound fat Walmart greeter, this would be like you laying down in just your boxers and her just kind of slowly backing into you and putting her heel on your nut sack.
Oh my god,
that is Duke Nukem Forever.
So this is a buy.
This was a I almost ran back to Redbox, but I beat it just to beat it. It did have a couple redeeming factors. Some of the guns are fun. There's a shrink ray. It's kind of cool. You step on guys. There's a monster truck sequence.
Shrink ray. It sounds so – it literally sounds as if they write the whole thing in the 90s, and then they were like,
yeah,
well, fuck, I guess we'll still make the same game.
Yeah, there's a shrink ray. There's a monster truck that has nitro.
Wow.
Which is pretty awesome.
There's it's like you're at the carnival, and the guy's like, if you go behind this curtain, you'll see something amazing.
Oh, I have to talk about this because you guys won't believe me. There's a couple sequences in the game where they slow the action down, and they're like, we're gonna do some role playing fetch quests mixed in with the action, you know. And so Duke, since you're the badass and you are like about to run for president, you own your own line of fast food restaurants and strip clubs.
What are they called?
Duke Burger.
Okay.
Yeah, Duke Burger. And
so the premise there is that I would walk into a restaurant and ask for a Duke Burger.
A Duke Burger. Which should have been the name of the game. I would like Duke Burger. But so you're at a strip club, and there's full frontal nudity in this game.
Blowjobs too, right?
There's blowjobs. The game actually opens to a blowjob.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Which, I've by the way, playing Duke with my wife sitting next to me was just her shaking her head at me for a good 12 hours. But Duke, since he owns his own strip club and he has a little downtime between missions saving the world, he wants to have sex with a stripper who works for him. But before he can do this, she's like, Duke, I'm not going to have sex with you unless you find a condom. My vibrator. It's a dildo. My condoms, a dildo, and I would really like some popcorn, but it has to be freshly popped. So you have to scour the strip club multiple levels and look inside boxes to look for these items, and eventually you find the popcorn, but then you got to take the popcorn and take it to the microwave. You got to pop it for her. Then you present her with the dildo and the condom and the popcorn, and then you shake it, baby. And then, of course, the magic happens. That's a nice 35 minutes of your life that you spend doing those things. And I don't even really know what to talk about. So,
it's a little Leisure Suit Larry copyright infringement, it sounds like.
Yeah, no, very Leisure Suit Larry. So I must buy. Go out and get it, guys. Please.
I think I just played the game through you, and I appreciate
that. Yeah, thanks. Because I actually don't want to play that game at all.
Please don't. Don't ever play it.
So the last thing on our review list, I don't think I'm really supposed to talk about, but I don't really care anymore.
But there's stuff.
The New York Times wrote about it. I can't. It's borderline ridiculous now. So.
Well, then you can talk about it.
Yeah.
Can you know?
I had an invite to Google Plus, which is the new social network that Google announced this week. They announced it actually while I was in Savannah on Monday, and I already had an invite at that point.
But it is a little different than a Facebook, is it not?
It is. So we're going to get into some of the features really quick. We'll talk about it. It doesn't have any blowjobs or frontal nudity. Well, I mean, I guess it could have frontal nudity. It kind of depends on who you're friends with. But
Marty and Twit.
Oh, I thought you said somebody named Marty and Twit, and I was like, what is Marty and Twit?
Marty and Twit.
All right, so basically, Google has notoriously had some failures in the social marketplace.
This is not Google Buzz, is what you're trying
Google
to tell
me. Yeah, Google Buzz was their, like, kind of Twitter clone. And the thing is, like, I don't know about you guys. We all have Facebook and Twitter accounts here at this table. I don't actually use Facebook that heavily. I get on it and I see what other people post, but I don't actually post to Facebook a whole lot. I recently put some pictures up because they were like old band pictures and stuff that I knew other people would appreciate that I was friends with. But other than that, I don't really get on Facebook a whole lot. There's not a lot that draws me to Facebook. And then Twitter is this weird, just perfect little website to me because I don't know how you can improve it. Honestly, it's so simple and so basic. And it does one thing, and it does one thing really well, and that's all it does. And, like, I think that's why Facebook doesn't try to compete with it. I mean, they have their status updates, but I don't think I don't think they've ever been like, we're going to take Twitter out. And I feel like Google tried to compete with it with Buzz and realized pretty quickly that Twitter already had 200
really
million
confusing.
People. They didn't need anybody else, and they already were doing what they were doing well.
That's didn't hit the rollout too well with that either.
Yeah. So this time they switched gears. They came out with this thing called Google Plus. They it was very selective invites at first. I think you pretty much had to know somebody at Google or be in press to get it. I don't know that there was any other way to get an invite originally. They did eventually open up invites for one night, and we'll talk about that briefly. But what it is essentially it's it is somewhat similar to Facebook. You sign in, you have a wall that you basically are looking at, and it's got a stream of all your friends' updates and your updates just kind of in chronological, well, pseudo-chronological order going up. And then you use Google Chat to chat with whoever's online. It doesn't have any other different chatting. And there's no messaging. There's no email-type system because I would assume they think you have Gmail, so sure. Why would you build another messaging system into a social? There's a pointless at that point.
Yeah.
The stuff that's online, the thing, we'll talk about the online thing first and then the mobile because I have the mobile app too. The thing that's online that makes this product different from Facebook is that in Facebook you have friends and that's it, right? I mean, you have 200 friends and that's what you've gathered. In Google Plus, you have these things called circles. And what circles are organizational groups that you make up, you determine them however you want. So you can You can make jerks. You literally could. You can make any name, and it doesn't.
So it'd be a circle jerks.
Yes, and it doesn't. And it doesn't broadcast that name to. I'm going to Ryan you on that one. Just move right past it.
I think it'd be a jerk circle. Actually,
it would be a jerk circle. It doesn't broadcast that name. Seriously, though, so if you were to name like, you know, assholes, I know, like that name would never actually make it to those people.
Oh, okay.
They don't, as far as I could tell. I don't know what circle I'm in for other people. I just know that they added me to a circle. And what the circle does is it lets you, when you post updates or you use pictures or you post videos or anything that you post up, you actually choose who you post it to. So you can say it's public and anyone on the internet can see it. You can say it's only to people in circles and then it only shows it to everybody in your circles. Or you could literally say family or coworkers or family and friends and it'll just post that update to that circle.
So yeah, that's kind of cool.
That's awesome because Facebook has groups, but like being able to publish, like say who you're going to publish it to as you publish it is not something that
Facebook
does.
And
Facebook's
stream and pictures and all that stuff just goes to, it's everybody or no one. It's all it is.
I think all of us have that problem. Like we work with people. Yeah. It's not like we don't like the people we work with, but you don't want to like make a dick and fart joke.
But what if you're having like a shitty day and you want to post about your shitty day at work and like.
And you can't.
I would love to be able to post to you guys and just be like, oh, fuck, I had a horrible day at work. And then you guys see it, but not, you know, Rob, the IT guy that I know who I think listens to the podcast.
What's up, Rob?
Like, you know what I mean? Like, not and nothing against him. It's just sometimes I don't need to post everything to everybody, you know?
Well, you
and,
don't want to be unprofessional, like posting things like to colleagues.
I always am like blown away when we have friends that do this who are like totally hungover at work. And I'm like, really?
Really?
No one on your work is going to read that?
Mm-hmm.
But
it's a little too dicey to like manage that kind of content on Facebook.
It is, and that's why I don't do it. That's literally why I don't post on Facebook because I'm just like, I just don't know.
It's like you can't even remember who are in your friends list. You're like, man, I hope my dad doesn't, you know, or whatever. Yeah.
I mean, it's so massive now. It's hard for me to know what is in it. So the other cool thing is that pictures tie to Picasa. So if you have a Picasa account, all of your pictures in Picasa are immediately in Google Plus.
Cool.
If you don't have a Picasa account, it just creates one for you. And you have unlimited uploads, seemingly. I haven't seen a number yet.
I thought there was a cap for Picasa with photos.
I think they removed it with the Google Plus.
You guys remember back at MySpace when you had 7 pictures?
Yes.
That was rad. And there was like a trick.
MySpace
like,
just sold for $35 million to Justin Timberlake. P.S.
Justin Timberlake?
Bring it on down to MySpace!
A company that he apparently has a very heavy interest in has bought MySpace for $35 million. $35 million. It sold to News Corp for $700, I think. Million.
Damn.
So
that's why everyone's been tweeting fire sale.
Anyways, so and I actually can't get online. Shit. Our internet's down here at Nerd Appropriate Castle. I think that's that really is the defining feature in the online app.
I saw something about a meetup.
Yeah. So that's the big thing that I think separates them from Facebook. As far as like a basic social network kind of works, that Circles thing is a big change in how you organize your friends and how you can publish to who.
Graphically, how's the GUI?
Gorgeous.
Really? I figured it
Google
would.
Google is fucking really nailing it out of the park.
Yeah, they
now
have great GUI.
They used to suck though, man. Their GUIs used to be just horrible. Their user interfaces were just awful every time I saw it. And they have some, they hired somebody somewhere that was like, why are you guys making shitty interfaces? And their new stuff is just, it's like clean and just everything works really well. Yeah. And it loads really cool. Like when you, so when you're going to organize your friends, it's just a big board and it has all your friends in these like name card kind of things. You can highlight a bunch of, you click a bunch of them and then you just drag them to a circle. And when you do it, it's such a hokey effect, but it looks so awesome. It takes all those pictures and groups them up and it like stacks them like this. And then puts a name tag over them and says, like, friends, as you drag it to the friends circle. And then oh, it drops
just
them
just like
in,
you were doing it on your desk
and it, like,
in real life.
And it, like, rotates all your all the people around the picture. So that's really cool. The other things online, the really kind of dumb one that I really love because it's something I'm really bad at, but other people are kind of, like, scoffing at it somewhat, is a thing called Sparks. And Sparks are basically just RSS curators. It's really weird. So, like, a Spark, you would choose a topic. Like, I have comic books is one of my topics. And when I click comic books, it takes me to a newsreader view. But it just curates news related to comic books based on Google's poll and probably on my account information, too. I don't know. But it actually curates it from, like, popular comic blogs.
What's the problem
like
with
that? Nothing. It's just everybody's like, an RSS reader? Like, a lot. I think a lot of people are already established in that. They already have their Google Reader with all the blogs they want to read. The difference being for me, I'm horrible at that shit. I don't read any blogs, basically. So the blogs I do read, I like read one. You know, like I read like Engadget.
Yeah.
And I read Joystick. I don't read all tech
blogs. So you're saying this sort of does like a meta thing?
It does it for you. It's just like, oh, here's all of your comic book blogs that you might want to read.
Oh, well, that's awesome.
Yeah, and it just like it posts all the stories and you can just kind of click through them. And then you can share straight to your wall from your Sparks.
That's awesome.
You just click a button. Very and moves cool. It. The other new feature is called Hangout, and what Hangout is video chat, but it's video chat, multiple person video chat. So you can have 5, 6, 7 people in a room video chatting.
Serious question, not saying this to be an ass, but is this going to have pornographic uses? I mean, any.
Okay. I don't know how you want me to answer that.
No, because yes, here's the deal. Anytime you offer someone on the internet,
it's not random video chat.
It's going to be pointed at genitalia.
Sure, sure, but it's not random video chat, and it's in your circle of friends.
Okay. With a name and a.
But what's
like a?
But yeah. What is cool about it is that, like, let's say I was at work and I was in my lunch hour and I was bored and I didn't, you know, like, whatever. I can click on the Hangout, and it just what it ends up happening is when I click it, it feeds into the stream of all of my friends, and it's like, hey, Matt's available for a Hangout. So, like, instead of you having to, like, IM and, like, you know, Twitter, like, hey, I'm going to – if anybody wants to video chat, I'm bored. You just, like, literally click a button and it's just like, hey, Matt's available.
That's
if you
actually
want
to, pretty
cool.
Chat with
them. So, you could, cool. Like, hang – could you hang out in your circle? Like,
yeah,
in
yeah.
a circle?
Yeah, yeah. And then all whoever that you want to hang out with can click on it and say, like, oh, let's hang out. Or you can invite people to hang out with you. And then whenever they're available, they just click it.
Kind of just
comes
like
in.
A virtual space. If anyone yeah. shows up, you show up.
What's mind-blowing about it is Melissa and I tested it out. I clicked it and she was like, sure, hit yes. And it was like 2 seconds later, we're video chatting. And I know that sounds ridiculous, but very recently I tried to Skype video chat with a friend in New York. And then I tried to Google video chat with a friend in New York. And both of them failed. And I could not get either one working. We ended up on speakerphone because we were trying to learn guitar lines.
Oh, right.
We ended up on speakerphone with each other trying to get it to work so we could just talk because we couldn't get
Skype
anything
can
done.
Skype can be a pain in the ass. Really
this was like one click. It was up running. Everybody was, we were both there talking. And then the other cool thing is so – let's say you have 5 people. It has 5 like preview windows at the bottom of everybody. So there's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Whoever talks, whoever's got focus, pulls up into the main window, and it is the smoothest,
crazy.
Most fluid thing I've ever seen in my life.
Is it just constantly in motion then?
It just constantly. Whoever starts talking, it'll pull it up. What I haven't seen is when like 3 people talk at the same time. Yeah. I don't know what happens. But if it's just like back and forth, it'll just like flick focus to whoever's talking.
That sounds like the future.
It's crazy, awesome. And it works extremely, I think, like, because I think that's the thing is, like, some people might be like, well, it's just video chat. My argument to it would be it's so simple and so good at just being a video chat that it's really hard to argue.
This is probably an obvious answer, but just to clarify, is this something that's going to be free for everybody?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Google's going to roll this
out. And do you think with increased users, the servers are going to be hit pretty hard and it won't be as seamless? Google.
I have never had – I don't think I've ever in my life been like, oh, Google's moving so slow. Google is like what I use to check to see if I have internet.
Yeah, I do the same thing.
Like Google, it's like Google.com. Oh, Google's up. I have internet.
Yeah.
Why is Facebook fucked up? You know, like I don't think that they're going to have any data. This is – they – I posted an article about it. Google serves over has hit the what was it 10 billion or one or 1 billion. It was hit the 1 billion hits unique hits in a month mark.
Wow.
They're the first company to ever do it. So I don't think traffic is going to be an issue for this site pretty much ever.
Do you want to say anything about the mobile experience?
Yeah, so
Google
the mobile
Plus?
Experience if you have an Android phone it is available. If you don't, sorry, Google doesn't care about you right now. I think iPhone will come pretty quickly. I don't see that taking a super long time. Windows 7, I have no idea when it's going to get over there.
It's not a problem.
But Android got it right away. The things that are added into your Android app that are not in the... Well, they are there, but they're not the same in here. Check-ins. So, you know, your Foursquare, your Places on Facebook. Same thing with Google. It uses Google Places, and it was really smooth. You can add people to it, just like in Facebook. You just, like, check in. Like, I was at Stardust with Ryan. I checked into Stardust with Ryan, and it, like, did the whole thing without issue. Worked really easily. And then the other very cool thing is called Huddle. And Huddle is a group chat platform. So what it is very similar to kind of a Wave-ish thing on your phone where I can invite people into conversations. And then as you've been invited in, you can see the conversation. You can start chatting with everybody else. And it'll do it through SMS. It'll do it through
the
app.
This is long overdue, P.S.
Yeah, it's super easy, very simple to use, and just a really useful application in my eyes. And it ties into all your circles. So you could actually group chat with a circle if you wanted to send out a chat to everybody.
That's awesome.
And the Android has a separate app. That it's inside of Google. You can or inside of the Google Plus app, but it actually – downloaded a whole other app just called Huddle that you can use called and it pulls up all your group chats, stream check-ins, and I think that's pretty much everything. It's tied into the phone, of course. I mean, it's a Google product, so it's tied into the phone really nicely. But it just works, man.
And what's the sitch with the invitations?
And
right
then
now?
the photos, real quick, on your phone, you can set it to instant upload. So every photo you take immediately uploads to Picasa.
That is awesome.
It's immediately private because Picasa has privacy settings. And then you can view your photos that you've recently uploaded and then share them with whatever circles you want to share them with, however you want to do that.
That sounds great.
So everything ties in. It is honestly probably one of the smoothest rollouts I've ever seen Google do. They're pretty notorious for rolling half-baked products out. And this is not that at all. This is just an awesome... I have found myself going into Facebook less and less. And the only reason I've gone into Facebook is to see other people because there's not a lot of people in Google Plus yet.
So how do we get into Google Plus?
So that's the thing. On day five or four, it was when we got back from Savannah. So it was probably the fourth day that that had been announced. All of a sudden, weirdly, there was a little invite button on the right. They didn't announce invites at all. There just was a button. And there was seemingly no limit to how many people you wanted to invite to it into Google Plus. I got one invite out to Melissa, literally the only one. I got it out to Melissa, and then the next day I was going to call you and be like, hey, I have Google Plus invites if you want one, right? Yeah. So I invite Melissa. 2 hours later, the invite button's gone. Gone completely.
Close the door.
Google made one announcement about it because everybody freaked out and said, like, what the hell? Why is there no – where'd the invite button go? Google made one announcement, and all they said was, yes, invite's gone for right now. We're just going to say that the response was a bit they didn't say overwhelming. They said the response was excited or something like that. They, basically, what I think happened is everybody realized all of a sudden that they had unlimited invites and just started spamming invites out to people.
Yikes.
It didn't automatically get people in. Melissa did get in, but it took like an hour or two before the invite actually returned. And by the time it returned, the invites returned.
Maybe they cut some off at some point.
I think
point.
They did. I don't think everybody that got an invite got in. So it's still very early. I mean, this is super, super early. I happened to get in through knowing somebody. That's the only reason I got in. And I think probably what will happen is a more like real beta will probably happen within the next month, I think. I don't think they're going to wait that long because if they wait too long, it kind of dwindles the social aspect of the social network.
Right.
So I think invites are going to go pretty quick. I'll probably have like 30 that I can hand out. And then unless I know you can't have one. And then I have like people at work, they're like spamming me for them, and I'm like, I can't invite. They're like, I heard that if you share it with it, and I'm like, I can't invite anybody right now. There's no button to invite anything. But it's cool. I'm really happy with it. It's gonna it's probably gonna take me away from Facebook, to be honest with you. But I will be honest also, I was not a huge Facebook user in the first place. But this works really well, tied into everything I want it to be tied into.
It's cool. I'll definitely give it a shot.
Yeah. So that is it for our reviews. We have one more thing today, which let me check the time.
Did you want to say anything about that thing on the list right there?
I think we're going to hold, because I want to play that too. So I'm
short version. I'm playing Fear 3 right now.
And it's awesome.
It's great. I'm loving it.
I'm going to red box it.
I'm going to ask you one question. Do I need to play the first two games to play this one?
I played Fear 2, Origin.
I would go hit the old Wikipedia.
I'm just saying that. In terms of, like, you know, you didn't play Red Faction, doesn't matter. But
you're going to want to know the story.
Okay.
The story is relatively, not super important, but it helps.
Okay.
So definitely read something and then you'll be straight.
Sweet.
So to cap off today, we're going to finally finish up our TV Death Watch.
Cool.
And that'll be it.
I don't know if we can do that.
I think I just need to. I'll handle it. I know why you're saying that, but I'll handle it. Just give me a second. That'll end our HD edition of.
Neat. That's awesome.
What's happening right now? I'm so scared.
All right, give us 1 minute.
All right.
Back. The gods of Bright House have decided to not let us get online here.
I thought we said we didn't know if it was them. Are we just going to...
Or Linksys.
Let's please blame them.
It's either Linksys or Bright House. So
let's blame Bright House.
We'll put them both on notice.
Bright House, you're on blast! Yeah!
I like that you're our Flavor Flav.
Now that we have these microphones, can we load up a soundboard too?
We can. I was actually thinking about that.
Oh, shit.
We can load in sounds.
That's dangerous, man.
Bow, 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 bow.
Every 10
Randy.
seconds.
Randy.
Fart sounds. That is episode 28 of Rated NA Podcast for NerdAppropriate.com.
Hooray.
We have microphones.
We do.
And thank you for listening to us on our microphones.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys.
I hope this sounds better.
It's true. So you definitely check us out on Twitter, at NerdAppropriate. We have a Facebook page, which
/ Nerd Appropriate.
7,000 people are liking right now.
We got to figure out how to get that bumped up.
Yeah.
Facebook's our next mission.
Yeah.
Can we start a Google Plus page for
sure? Nerd?
Refreshingly, no.
Okay, good. That's great.
No, we cannot.
No.
I think I'm okay with
not
that.
Not a platform for marketing.
I'm
yet.
Okay with that.
Yet. Sweet. Well, that is it. And this is where the music comes in.
Music.
Sweet.
Bye.
Later.